This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Well, if you listen to all the talk and check out what's on social media and listen on the radio, you would, it would appear that we are well on our way then to level one, that it's only a matter of time before the president will announce that South Africa is now moving to lockdown level one. And, the authorities or the advisory committee have said that after the report said to decline of coronavirus infections, South Africa is ready to move to alert level one of lockdown. The president told a meeting of the South African National Editors Forum last week that the National Coronavirus Command Council was in consultation with social partners about the possibility of moving to level one. The country has seen fewer hospitalizations and hospital admissions and a decline in bed occupancy for COVID-19. Let's speak now to Professor Salim Abdul Karim. He's the chair of the Interministerial Committee. Thank you, Professor Karim, as always, for talking to us. Let's start firstly with a reflection on these numbers and where the emphasis is. A lot of people some people have said, or those that are a bit more cynical about the idea of moving to a lower level of alert level, saying that the reason why we're seeing a decline in the numbers of people infected is because we are also doing a lot less testing at this stage. Is that in fact true? Because it sounds to me like it means that what Donald Trump has been telling us all around is actually true, that the reason why the United States has so many cases is because they're testing more than anyone else in the world.
Good afternoon, Tabiso, and good afternoon to the listeners. So when we look at the number of cases, we can't look at it in isolation. We also have to look at the number of tests, and importantly, we have to look at the proportion of tests that are positive. And if we look at those two markers, number of cases and proportion positive, both of them are going in the same direction. In other words, they are going down. And the number of tests over the last 2 to 3 weeks has been fairly constant. Just today, the numbers from yesterday were slightly lower, but generally South Africa has been doing somewhere around 15 to 20,000 tests per day. But that's not enough. You have to look at it also in relation to the number of admissions. And if you look at the number of admissions, that's also steadily going down. Now, why is it that we have fewer tests? Well, it's because testing is done principally on people who come in with symptoms. So when you've got lots of people coming into a hospital or to a clinic and they got symptoms, they go to their doctor and they got, you know, sore throat and they got cough, the doctor says, well, you may have COVID, I need to do a test. So if fewer people come in with these symptoms, you have fewer tests being done. So it's not accurate that our decline in numbers is due to a decline in tests. Mm-hmm. That's simply not true.
Right. Now, that said then, Prof, you have all but given a green light to move to alert level one of lockdown. But I like what you said, and I'd like you to elaborate more on this one, to say that we must just also accept that we must begin to prepare ourselves and accept that we are now in the so-called new normal.
Yeah, I think the stage at which we are at now, I have sort of worked on the basis that the threshold we should aim for to see low transmission is when we see less than one case per 100,000 people per day. So that translates to less than 600 cases per day.
Is that now indicative of the flattening of the curve that we spoke about so much?
I just call it low transmission. The WHO, the World Health Organization, uses a 5% of tests that are positive as its marker. It's a similar sort of mark, and they basically both are saying there's low levels of community transmission. When we have low levels of community transmission, there's actually no need for us to be at any level. What we need to do is we need to now come to terms that we are now in the new normal. and that we're going to have to live with these restrictions and using prevention measures now for several months, if not years. And so I think we have reached a stage that goes beyond levels to one of where we have to just come to terms, accept and move on and adapt our lives to the new normal. And that essentially means ensuring we have our protection measures, our social distancing, our hand washing, our mask wearing, and that we avoid situations that put us at risk, like in crowds and enclosed environments, and that we don't have super spreading events.
Right.
So mass gatherings is a no-no.
Even outdoors, Prof?
I think in outdoor situations, it's a different risk. And so in outdoor situations, you can afford to have more people than you would in an indoor situation. But I think all of that depends on lots of other things. It's not just outdoors. It's a question of how many people, how are they going to get there? Are there areas where they have to come through a narrow entrance? So there's a lot of other things to consider. And that's what we worry about when it comes to spectators in sports.
So
even, you know, the countries that have controlled their epidemics, like Australia and, you know, Singapore and so on, even they have put restrictions on spectators in sports because the risk is still too high.
Right. Prof, I'm glad you touched on Australia because they seem to have taken a much more aggressive approach in terms of when they do implement lockdown again. Because in the state of Victoria and around Melbourne, I gather their daily numbers were only at around 800, which is lower than where we are at the moment. But they had implemented lockdown. In the UK, lockdown is being implemented in areas where infections have been consistently at 2,000 new cases per day. Why is it, misguided maybe to make such comparisons or compare ourselves with their situations in the sense that why is it that when we have such numbers, we are already, in fact, talking about going to even a lower alert level?
You know, it's called desensitization. Because, you know, the worst of our peak was around 12,000 cases per day. When we see 2,000 cases now, we think, oh, that's actually pretty good. But just think back in April. If we had 2,000 cases in April, we would have been in panic mode, right? That this is getting out of hand.
Yes.
It's just a question of which side of the curve you're on. When you're on the downside of the curve, you tend to look at it that it's not just the actual number of the day, but the trend that you're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
Australia did very well in initially controlling its epidemic. Mm-hmm. And they had a different approach, which was much more aggressive. And so too did New Zealand, very aggressive in terms of lockdown. And their problem was that they had a super spreading event in Melbourne. And so they had to do something quite drastic because if they didn't, it would have got out of hand.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite unusual that you, not quite interesting that you raised it because I've been talking to my colleagues in Melbourne and they were describing, their lockdown in Queensland and around Melbourne, they even blocked the roads off.
Wow.
So, you know, people weren't allowed to go in and out without, you know, several checks and so on. So it was a very severe action because they don't tolerate even a few cases. They want to get to zero cases like New Zealand.
Okay, cool. And then also, Prof, in terms of this second wave of resurgence here, is that an inevitability in terms of what we are seeing now happening in parts of Europe? Is this something that is inevitable or what is the viewpoint? What is the wisdom on that?
So when we look at the evidence from the other countries, many, if not most of the countries that have, that we've seen the epidemics have had a second surge. In some countries, it's quite severe, for example, Spain. And when we look at that, it becomes clearer to me that it gets often to a point that people become complacent. They stop wearing their masks. They get, you know, they get a bit lackadaisical about doing the prevention activities. And so that might be one of the triggers. In other countries, triggers have been different. Our epidemic is now at a stage where we could end up with a second surge if we had a super spreading event. So if we had a situation where several hundred people got infected, they went back into their homes and infected others, we could be back to square one with the case going up. And that's what we want to avoid. Yeah. It is not inevitable, but there's a high likelihood of it occurring.
All right, final one for you, Prof. And just the Minister of Health, Dr. Mkhize, spoke about the setting up of a ministerial advisory committee that has been created to focus on the creation of a coronavirus vaccine. I know that there have been trials that have been happening in South Africa. This was the minister here referring to us now, South Africa, also entering the race, if I can call it that, for this for a vaccine.
So the new ministerial advisory committee on vaccines, which is chaired by Professor Shoup, a world eminent virologist and vaccinologist, is looking at several things. It's looking at trying to encourage more research, look at local production, but mostly its focus is on how we can ensure that we get an equitable access to a vaccine. So if a vaccine is shown to be effective, do we have the mechanisms in place and can we get access to that vaccine, or are we going to have to join the end of the queue and wait for several years before we get a vaccine? So that's its main task at the moment that it's focusing on.
Is that now to engage with other countries in terms of where we might stand in, like, jump the queue and get the vaccine when it does come, or
well,
be first in line?
For us, the World Health Organization, together with two other organizations that deal with vaccines, they're called Gavi and CEPI. I won't go into what that stands for. But basically, these three organizations have created a new mechanism called COVAX. And COVAX is an opportunity for countries, any countries, to come into it and to make an advance commitment. And in return, about 20% of their population will have access to a vaccine. And so that's the basic idea, that no one country will hoard all the vaccines, that we will spread it out amongst all of us. And many countries have already signed up to that.
All right. Thank you so much, Prof, as always, for your time. Really appreciate it.
It's only a pleasure to be so. All the best.
There you go. Professor Salim Abdul Karim, he's the Interministerial Committee Chairperson.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.